We are in Sefer Chovos al Havavos Shavuos Elokim, Perek Yud. The Seichel is talking to the Nefesh, and he's describing the range of different emotions. And he says that there's another range of emotion, which is Busha and Azut, shame and courage, or brazenness. Makom ha-busha hu k'sha'at mamre et ratzon ha-boreh ha-meitiv lach al yedei tova atzma sh'natan lach b'fanav v'odo negdach ועוד הוא מוכיח אותך על ידי יהודה וטובים והרעים על ידי תוכות נביאיו So on the one hand, there's a concept called shame. Shame is an extreme which has healthy and unhealthy expressions. A healthy expression of shame would be like we described last week, where a person has a sensitivity to his inner world, and when he does something which he recognizes as inappropriate, he's able to look within himself and say, I have an indicator to know that what I did was wrong. And that indicator is shame. If I do something wrong too many times, I will lose that indicator. It will just become part of my nature. But in the meantime, I have a way of knowing, of identifying when something is inappropriate. We tell the story here of David HaMelech and Shaul and the cloak. We told that enough. No? When David HaMelech was running away from Shaul, then he went into a cave. And Shaul chased after him. And the people who were with David were saying, this is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's a rodent trying to kill you. Take the opportunity that Hashem gave you and kill him before he kills you. And David HaMelech wasn't sure if it was correct or not to kill Shaul. So he cut his cloak. Chazal said that he cut off his tzitzis. Corner of his cloak and he cut off his tzitzis. And then he said, no, it was wrong, I did that. And he left Shaul. And then Shaul came out and then he said, why are you trying to kill me? Am I like a dog? So some of Porsham explained that the reason why he cut the cloak was to give Shaul proof that he could have killed him. Look how close I was to you. Look, I cut off your tzitzis. That's how close I was. I didn't kill you. That's according to Pshat. But the Malbim explains something very deep. The Malbim explains that a man has an inner busha, and he's able to identify when he's doing an act, is that act coming from a place within him that he's fulfilling a mitzvah? Or is that act coming from in him with a place of he has a negative trait and he's expressing a negative trait. David HaMelech himself wasn't sure where it was coming from within him. Wasn't that he just wanted to be the king already, and he was just fed up of Shaul already, and therefore he's going to go and kill him? Or was it coming from a place of, there's a din rodef and it's halacha, and this is like Hashem is giving him opportunity. He wasn't sure. He couldn't tell. So he said, well, let me do a little bit. And he cut off a part of the cloak, and then he looked within himself. What emotion was he feeling? And he identified within himself there was a feeling of it was wrong. That was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. And then he knew that it was inappropriate. And that's why he cut off the cloak. As a test for himself to see which emotion he was feeling. Was he feeling an emotion of a mitzvah, joy? Was he feeling a mitzvah of busha? So it's a healthy busha. That's a very high level, that. A person's able to identify such a thing. But anyone's able to identify when they said something wrong, they said something harmful to another person, it's a very easy time to see it, and you see on the person's face they feel hurt, they're trying to cover up, they feel hurt, trying to pretend to laugh along with you, and you can recognize that and you feel like I probably shouldn't have done that. That's a very healthy God-sent indicator for you to know that was inappropriate. Listen to that, learn from that. That's a healthy busha. An unhealthy busha is where a person is doing a good thing, but they've made up a false image of who they would like to be ideally. They've made a goal for who they would imagine themselves to be according to what their desire they will be is, like maybe a good vision, but they're not that yet. And then they don't get that because they're not that. They would like to be that, but they're not on that level yet. And then they feel this sense of worthlessness, of shame, that you're not accomplishing what you could. And if they would ask themselves, is it realistic? Then the answer would be no, because that's not who I am right now. But they imagine themselves to be higher. Now, that imagination is healthy in theory. It's giving them a sense of like who I would like to be, where I would like to reach. What's unhealthy here is they're not just imagining it for the future, they're imagining it for now and pretending that they're already. And then when they're not able to keep that up, they feel a sense of worthlessness, that they're not who they would imagine themselves to be. That's an unhealthy, and then they're feeling shame. That's an unhealthy shame. That's a shame that's coming from a mistake. It's a false image of the self, which is a mistake. So a person has to recognize when is shame is a healthy shame, when it's another shame. Taking shame to an extreme too much could shut a person down. Could make a person not able to function. He feels so full of shame that he's not able to pick himself up and carry on. And that's an unhealthy shame taken to an extreme. A healthy shame is a shame where he recognizes it. Thanks, I called his Baruch Hu for sending him the message. Oop, that was an uncomfortable feeling. I don't want to have that again. What can I learn from this? How can I take it forward? And then he changes his action. In order that in that shame, you serve as a good indicator for him. Like, mashallah ma davadome. If you're driving, sorry, I'll start it better. If you're a law-abiding citizen and you're driving and you reach the speed limit, so sometimes in the car or on Waze, then it goes ding, 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 and it tells you you've gone above the speed limit. Right now, does that mean, oh my gosh, I'm terrible, this is the worst thing that's happened, and I'm okay? No, it just means you went too fast, go slower. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything more. Shame is a very good, healthy emotion. It's giving you a warning. You've gone too fast, slow down. It doesn't mean you have to berate yourself or feel worthless. Like, it would be foolish. What would be the worst thing to do? It would be to do the ding, 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 keep going fast, and then say, I'm terrible, I'm terrible, I'm terrible, I'm terrible. No. Why do you feel terrible? Because it went ding, ding, ding. Okay, so slow down. Really? But I'm going fast. That's just what I'm doing. No, but the ding, ding, ding was a message for you, an indicator to go slower. Ah, you mean I can go slower? I don't have to feel bad? Yes! It seems so foolish in the example that I'm giving, but it's not so foolish in real life. People go beyond what's natural. They feel the guilt, and then they say, oh, I'm terrible. Look at that guilty feeling I have. I'm worthless. And they carry on doing the bad and feeling guilty and not using the guilt for what it was intended for. So unhealthy guilt is when they go all the way over, feel the guilt, and then feel bad about feeling the guilt, and then stay doing the bad thing with the feeling the guilt, and it all flops. The healthy thing would be to do is to feel the guilt, say, that was the message from Hashem. I recognize I'm doing wrong. Pick up on that signal. Stop doing the wrong thing. You don't have to feel guilty. Thank you, Hashem, for the message. A guilty feeling is a good, healthy thing. Sounds like it. You want to give an example? You want to ask another question? I have to answer. A person wakes up late and they miss Shachar. That's never happened, but in theory, if it would happen, I know you ask for real life, I'm trying my best. The person wakes up late and they miss Shachar. Now, if they're a law-abiding citizen, they will feel guilty. They'll say, oh my gosh, what did I do? Now, a wrong approach would be, that's it, my day's ruined. If I woke up late, that's like the worst thing, and now everything's going to go wrong. And then they say, well, if I already woke up late, so like, what's the point of even coming to the morning Seder? And then they would like just get some food and eat something, and then they feel so bad about themselves. That bad feeling they allow to resonate through them to the point where they say, like, I'm just worthless, so why I don't even like, I shouldn't even be in morning Seder. And then they miss morning Seder as well. And they feel bad about that. And their tikkun is like the lunch break, because it's so long anyway that kind of everyone's out taking a break, and then they feel they can come back for afternoon Seder. In a good case or not. That's an example where the bad feeling went too far. They felt the guilt, but they didn't take it the right way. They allowed it to penetrate them throughout, and therefore they stopped functioning even more. That ruined it. A healthy way would be to say, I woke up late, I feel bad. The fact that I feel bad, is that a good thing or bad thing? It's a good thing. Hashem telling me that I have a sensitivity to doing what's right. Right? Doing what's right is getting up on time. Thought immediately goes to, well, how can I at least make the most of what's left? And how can I ensure that it's not going to happen tomorrow and that I can be fully productive? And that person won't be like a regular person who has one alarm. He'll be going out of his way to ensure it won't happen again by asking someone to wake him up and by putting another alarm and whatever it takes for him to wake up. So he has a guilty feeling, but it's productive. It's a signal. It's an indicator for him of how to behave appropriately, and he's tuned into it. He thanks Hashem for that indicator. If he wouldn't have the indicator, it would be like a child who doesn't have the sensitivity to heat. So he just goes and puts his hand straight on the burner. And it's a bad thing. He doesn't have the indicator, he's going to burn his hand. The fact you have an indicator is a good thing. My wife and I debate this, but I think it's a good thing that you let a child go and touch a hot kettle or touch a hot oven. If they don't touch it, I'm cruel, I go and put them, that's what she doesn't agree with. But if you don't touch it, then the kid will never know, caution. It's a very healthy thing, the kid knows. The kid hurt himself, he burned himself a little bit. Is that a good thing? It's a good thing. Now they have to learn from the indicator not to go and do it again, they'll be careful. The parent never lets their kid like climb on those bars on the top. Then if the child's ever in a situation where they have to like get balanced, they'll say, oh, I don't have balance, and they'll just fall. But if you let the kids walk on the bars on the top, then they'll learn, okay, how to balance, then they'll have the security in there. So the indicator that helps you, yeah, that...
Still coming good.
You good? Okay.
We're talking about balance. At the end of the day, who cares about his feelings? Because if Joel has been very difficult, he's going to care a lot for the kids. Like, the wife's saying, push, maybe yes, maybe no, a lot of people do it.
That's a good question. The people who were with him said it was a din rodef, and he wasn't sure that it was a din rodef, meaning he wasn't sure that there wasn't another way to get out of it. So din rodef is only when there's nothing you can do to stop it. Here, Shaul hasn't seen him. A rodef doesn't have a din rodef if in general he wants to kill you, but right now he doesn't see you. If he's about to kill you and you can stop it, and you have to stop it, so you have to kill him first. I have to be very careful, by the way. There was a rabbi in the yeshiva who was taken for 8 hours questioning in the police after he mentioned the word din rodef. So I'm just being very careful. They're still recording. So I'm just being very careful what I'm saying. But right, so here, Shaul didn't have a din rodef technically, because David could have carried on hiding. And then Shaul would have left and walked away. Maybe he wouldn't have found him again. So as far as the halakha question wasn't a question. But he still saw, maybe it's Yad Hashem, that Hashem has given you this opportunity. That he wasn't sure about. That opportunity that he's brought into you. They would say it's an opportunity, yeah. Opportunity to, it's, meaning, everyone knew that David HaMelech was going to be the next king, after Shaul. Why was Shaul being brought into the cave at this moment in time? They said, this is a Yad Hashem for you to take what's rightfully yours of becoming the next king. He wasn't sure about that. That's Busha. Thank you for bringing us an example. Makes it much more real. So an unhealthy Busha and a healthy Busha. Now the other side, Azut. Makom midat ha'azut. שיש להוכיח את הרשעים ובעלי עבירות והחוקים על האמת, וכשיש לצוות את העם לעשות חסד ולהזהיר אותם מעשות עוול ולבייש את החוטאים ולהוכיח את הקטנים ואת הגדולים. This is similar to what we said yesterday, but I'll just take it a little further. Yesterday we spoke about the person has to have gvura. A person has to, well, let's take it a little further. There's the concept of chutzpah the kedusha. Now we know the idea of chutzpah in a negative light. Chutzpah is where you're speaking in a brazen manner, out of place, and that's a negative thing. But there is a concept of chutzpah the kedusha. There are times where there's an etiquette, and there's a rule, and there's a norm. And if you're going to follow the etiquette and follow that norm, then great things aren't going to get done. Everything will carry on in the way that it is. And if you know that you're coming from a healthy place, a good place, of wanting to break this norm in order to create a much greater system, then you have to have chutzpah. Because who are you? Who are you? Well, there are much greater people around who have much greater ideas, and they're not doing it, so who are you? So a person who is still on the side, leaning on the side of Busha, will say, yeah, who am I? Like, who am I to speak up? Who am I to make a fuss? I'm not someone of value. But a chutzpah to kedusha is where you say, I know there's a norm, I know there's a given, I know there's a protocol, I know there's an etiquette, but I still hear that something has to be done. And then you take this place of, I've used this phrase before, but it's an important phrase to use as a principle, of being assertive and not being aggressive. That's a cloud. Being assertive and not being aggressive. Which means that being assertive sometimes is being chutzpah. Like, you want to ask someone to learn with you. So you ask them, and they say no. And you ask them again, and they say no. And you ask them again. Now, you're not being rude. You're not saying, if you don't learn with me, and you give them some threat, there's no threat taking place here. But you still see it's going to be beneficial, so you keep asking. You ask in different ways, and you ask in a different time. When they phone for charity, so then they say, hi, this is representative of certain charity. I would like to speak about this charity. And you say, oh, I'm busy now. Oh, you're busy now? When is the convenient time for you? That's the next line that always comes. Now, when you say I'm busy now, you mean I don't want to speak to you. But you're too polite to say that, so you say I'm busy now. So they take your words literally, meaning intentionally. And they say, if you're saying you're busy now, what you're saying is that you would like to speak about it, but you feel busy now. Now you feel awkward now because you're not going to say, no, I don't want to speak to you. Then you say, okay, tomorrow. They go, okay, very good. What time tomorrow? And you go, I don't want to speak to you, but I've got myself into this matter. I'm stuck now. Okay, tomorrow after 6. Very good. We'll call back then. On your terms. They call back after 6. This is how they say this. You said we should call you tomorrow after 6 about this charity, so we're following up on your request. Would you like to hear now? What are you going to say now? Okay, go on. I said, what am I going to say? Okay, I said, go on. And then they tell you the whole spiel, and then you feel guilty about it, so you didn't. That's not always a bad thing. It's related to a good charity, it's a very good thing. It's very good. But if it's a negative thing, sometimes you might get yourself into something you don't want to do necessarily, and you have to be aware of that. That's chutzpah de kedusha. I mean, they know that you mean that you don't want to donate. They know that. They know that. And they're not lying and they're not being aggressive. They're doing everything in a correct way. But they're assertive. They're very assertive. They're saying, I know you don't mean this, but I'm trying to raise money for tzedakah and it's an important value. And therefore, I'm going to be persistent and assertive in a way which is never breaking any rules. That's chutzpah de kedusha. It's recognizing that something of value and then pushing through for it. Sometimes it's a matter that you feel that your parents or a rebbe isn't taking seriously enough. And it's a matter which you feel has to be taken more seriously. And you feel it's coming from a good place within you that you want this matter to be taken more seriously. But you feel like it's not your place to go and speak to your parents or to speak to your rebbe about this matter. Chutzpah de kedusha would mean in a respectful way, in a way that maybe not the etiquette, meaning not right for a child to go and tell his parents advice or guidance on things, but who cares? As good as these things pour into the world, it's chutzpah dik, but it's chutzpah de kedusha. You make sure you do it in the most respectful way possible, and you say the piece. And if you say it's not normal in my society, okay, that's chutzpah de kedusha. Being embarrassed here is going to be unhealthy. It's not going to lead to a greater thing that's going to happen. And therefore you go out and you say something which is, yesterday I gave some guys a lift. And once they got in the car, hitchhikers. And once they got in the car, so I said to them, okay, on condition that everyone says a devout Torah. And I don't even know if they were religious. And they're like, takata otanu. You got us stuck now in a position, and what are we going to do? We're stuck. That's good for the condition. Meaning, I was friendly to them, they were friendly to me, I gave them a lift, and it was exactly where they needed to go, so we were already on good terms. So it wasn't like I was, you know, oppressing them in any way. We were already kind of friends, so the fact that I did them a favor and we're happy. And then amazing things came out. They started saying Mishnayos Balpeh, and making Diyukim and Mishnayos. It was fantastic. What came out was amazing. We're like learning the whole way. That's chutzpah, because like, an ethical person would feel like, it's not my place to go and like tell someone else to say it's about Torah. If you're sitting on a bus next to someone who you don't know, the etiquette is to mind your own business. You don't start stirring up conversation with them and like making a fuss and like trying to talk about religion with them. Like, who are you? Mind your own business. If you do it in a way which is valuable and successful and polite, and someone could become religious from it. Someone who wasn't religious may have a question that he didn't have anyone to ask. You become friendly and you start speaking and you exchange phone numbers, and then when he's more comfortable, he asks you the question that was bothering him. You invite him for Shabbos, and with time he could become religious. Why? Chutzpah de kedusha. Because you had a sense, you overcame the embarrassment for something which was valuable. Someone wants to say a devout Torah, and they're embarrassed to say a devout Torah. That's an unhealthy busha. They overcome that busha, and they're able to share with the Torah. There are people who are very natural at being public speakers, and they don't always say things of value. There are people who have a lot of content, a lot of value within them, but they're shy. Those people have to overcome it. It's like, I have a message to give to the world. Chutzpah de kedusha, I'm going to go out there and say it. I'm going to go out there and knock on doors of important people and say a message because the important principle has to take place. It's not natural. So it's chutzpah, which is busha, there's an unhealthy busha and a healthy busha. Chutzpah, there's an unhealthy chutzpah, which is where you're invasive in a way which is rude, aggressive. But it's a healthy one where you recognize that it's coming from a true place, where you want to bring a real value to the world. But just your society doesn't have place for that. They have a mindset of liberal and pluralism and let everyone do their own thing. And therefore it's not normal in the society. And here you have chutzpah de kedusha and you speak up and you say, this is what needs to be done. In a respectful way, in a beneficial way. And, yeah.
But surely it's been happening it's happening clearly because people are allowing it to happen. So like, even the Great Rabbanim and Daf Torah, the community is allowing it to happen. So, like they're all said, who are you to say we have to? You can't be the only person who's thought this thought before.
You can't be the only, you can't come and give rebuke to Rabbanim. But you can come and question. You can come and question. And if you hear that what the Rabbanim are saying is, you're right, but we feel that like we don't have the power to stand up and make a fuss about this. And they say to you, but you amongst your friends, if you can make a difference, if you can make a ground, grassroots movement and make a difference, that would be the best thing in the world. You say, okay, well, I'll do it. It could be. It could be the Rabbanim will say, we don't feel like, one very important example, which actually I wanted to mention anyway, so I'll use this opportunity. The topic of Kedusha, the topic of Shmiras HaBris, the topic of Shmiras Einayim, is a topic which many Rabbanim don't speak about. And it bothered me because I feel that it's a very, very pressing issue. But I didn't want to start publicly speaking about it until I understood why it's not spoken about. Like maybe I'm missing something, maybe it shouldn't be. So I went around asking many Rabbanim this question. And the answer that I got was, is it appropriate? Is it an issue? Do people need to hear it? I said, yes, it is. They go, no, but like, everyone should be able to work it out themselves, surely, you know? No, it needs to be addressed. They say, okay, if you feel you have what to say about it, then share. And I realized that that was an example of something which needs to be spoken about and wasn't publicly spoken about it. So I wasn't rude. I just checked in with their bonnet, but it was a bit of chutzpah. You know, like, no one's speaking about it, so who am I to speak about it? Okay. No real clear good answer there. Okay, I'll go speak about it. So anyway, starting Thursday, 1:45, Thursday and Sunday, 1:45 for the next 4 weeks, there will be a chabura taking place in Rav Shlomo Friedman's classroom for a half an hour, from 1:45 to 2:15. It will be eight parts. It's called V'taher Libeinu. It's going to go through the topic of Shmiras Einayim, Shmiras HaBris, the Yetzer Hara, how to overcome it. The first part is going to be introduction to the topic, why it's not spoken about and why it's healthy to speak about it. Second part is going to be how to avoid getting into a situation to begin with. The third part is going to be when you're in a situation which is challenging, how to stop doing something inappropriate. The fourth one is going to be part two of that. The fifth one is going to be once you've done something inappropriate and you've fallen, what mindset should you have looking back of how to continue with good health. The sixth part is going to be the halacha lamaisa, about the whole topic of Shmiras Einayim, Shmiras HaBris. The seventh part is going to be, what does that mean about your relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu? And the eighth part is going to be, how can it be that this is happening bechelal in our generation, and why is it so severe, and what does it mean for our era and our generation, and kind of a bigger vision of like the more depth and meaning behind it. Starting this Thursday, 1:45 in a Shlomo Friedman classroom, every Thursday and Sunday for the next 4 weeks. Thank you for that pitch. Yeah.
So if the only way to go about it is, so obviously I can't go out on my Shabbat table and start telling everyone that it's supposed to be tomorrow, in a very respectful way, it doesn't look tomorrow. So the wrong thing is, the only way to do this is asking the Rabbanim, asking the Torah, why is this done? Is that the wrong thing?
In the case where it's a rav, then you have to not allow it to be quiet, but you have to take action. No, you shouldn't take action against the Rabbanim. So you check in with the Rabbanim, and then after checking in with the Rabbanim, and you get approval, doesn't have to get approval from everyone, there'll always be, if it's a topic like this, you'll always have opinions on both sides. But you find an opinion which makes sense to you, and someone who's got over the Torah, and then you act on it. Okay, so Hashem will continue the same topic on Thursday. Make a problem.